time again to Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Cluthie. So glad to have you listening here on Lime, Healthy Living with a Twist. That's Channel 114 here on Sirius Satellite Radio. And do not forget, we are always live from the website, lime.com. If you don't have Sirius Satellite at your home, your business, or maybe not in your car, hey, just go to the website, go to lime.com. The radio streams live from our studios. There's great blogs there. There's information. We have podcasting coming up. The television's there. All kinds of great information. Glad to have you with us today. I say hello and welcome to my two guests on today's program. It is Pamela Ray Heath. And Pamela, welcome to Positively Incorrect.
Oh, thank you.
And John Klimo. John, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
They are the authors of a very provocative, thought-provoking, important book in many ways for discussion of something that is the eighth leading cause of death in the U.S. for all men. It is suicide, but also the issue is tremendous for teenagers and women. But not just that, because these two individuals have done something that I've never seen before and pulled together a book that I think is going to be sort of used as the Bible, if you will, on this for many many years to come. Suicide, what really happens in the afterlife? Channeled conversations with the dead. Yes, those who have passed over, those who channel or are intuitive or bring forward thoughts, communication from people, spirits on the other side, what they have to say about suicide. There's a historical perspective in all this. It's really an awesome, awesome work. First, about my guest, John Klimo. Dr. Klimo is an associate professor of psychology at the American Schools of Professional Psychology at Argosy University in California. He's author of the definitive study on the phenomena of channeling investigations on receiving information from paranormal sources. And Pamela Ray Heath, Dr. Heath, holds a doctoral degree in parapsychology from ASPP and Rosebridge Graduate School of Integrative Psychology as well. She is author of The PK Zone, a cross-cultural review of psychokinesis. So we are talking about two of the leading experts, really, in this field. If anyone can be an expert on what happens when you die, I mean, you know, that's a whole nother piece. But we're going to explore what we feel happens when you die, or what spirits tell psychics happen when you die, and perhaps also looking again at why this issue is so important. The National Center for Injury Prevention and Control says most popular press says that suicide happens around the winter holidays. No, they happen in the spring. That's a myth. And the suicide rates are generally higher than the national average in the western states and lower in the eastern and midwestern states. All this information, what's important is if we can have one person stop a conversation about suicide, if we can have one person turn to someone who's threatening to suicide, if we can have someone understand maybe the experiences of someone who has been suicidal in their life and has taken their lives, and there's so many other issues. We're going to look at many of these today, but this is a phenomenal work, John and Pamela. So I thank you for taking the time to put this together. This is an important piece of work, and I wanted to get your feeling now that it's out in print, John.
My feeling? Well, yes. It's along the lines of what you said. We would like to be able to make whatever difference we can through this book of having people at least stop and think more carefully before they act on any suicide impulses, because if one subscribes to the consensus of the sources we've got on this information, you don't escape your problems, you just procrastinate them. There are repercussions of your acts. Life does seem to continue on after physical death, and suicide may not be the easy out that you think it is from this larger perspective, according to our book.
And I think I'll just take the take that life does proceed beyond what we call the physical plane and leave it at that. So we don't have to play footsie with that on this show today, because that's where I'm coming from. And Pamela Ray Heath, what's your take on this
book?
Well,
I'm also a physician, so part of what I like is the whole idea of informed consent. And we have a lot of people who may sort of pretend or try to get attention by doing a suicide attempt and not complete
yes.
it. We
right.
have their take. But this is a totally different take. This is looking at people who succeeded, who did what others are trying to do, and they're saying, okay, this is what happens if you do this. So that someone who's contemplating suicide really understands what they're getting into, and they may still decide to do it. But if so, they at least know what they're getting into. It won't be so difficult for them, necessarily. I think it also has the potential to bring some comfort to those left behind. Because
I think that's a big piece, Pamela. I think the comfort for the people left behind, actually, I think is a very important issue. Because, frankly, people who've done the act and done the deed, okay, and are in spirit, they're paying their consequences. But the consequences they've created and the payments they're having people make emotionally on this side, I mean, that's half of the consequences they're paying.
Yes, isn't it? They are very much aware of the pain and suffering of those they've left behind. They still love them. They still care about them. And they can't change what they've done. They can't change the hurt that they've inflicted on those they care about. And that can be very devastating for the suicide, but it also sort of tells the people left behind that it doesn't help to hold on to your guilt or hold on to your grief, because that's actually only hurting the person who committed suicide successfully.
Now, there are some other even larger questions that are overarching questions since 9-1-1. And the thing is, it's not like only since 9-1-1 have people been committing suicide murder in the name of, well, whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's just leave it at that. We know what we're talking about here. And historically, suicide, which obviously if you pull out a dagger and kill the king, you're committing suicide. Even though he may die first, you're pretty much dead, you know. So it's not like this is a new thing. It's just that it has entered our consciousness in such a horrible, profound way. And you have a lot of pieces of the book. The last third of the book looks a lot at those who take their lives and take the lives of others with them in the context of the possibility that I call reality, that there is life after death, that in fact death is just a doorway to the next level of our energy, if you will. As Uncle Albert said, you know, energy can't be destroyed. It just changes form. I think that's what he was really talking about. So, John Klimo, you have had extensive background in studying parapsychology. You've got another major book coming out that we won't talk about yet because I want to save that for another show. But what was new for you in all the extensive years of your work, John, in this work about suicide, what really happens in the afterlife? What pulled together for you that you didn't maybe have a look at or didn't realize before that we need to know?
Well, most of my earlier involvement with research on survival of physical death, which is one of the three focuses of parapsychology, usually survival research in short, was just about the issue of, is there evidence that we survive physical death? How can we know that? Is there any irrefutable proof? Are there other explanations for the supposed evidence? And that was where my expertise lie, my understandings lay. But I hadn't really looked at suicide per se when you end your own life. And what really threw me into it was a whole ethical issue as well as a metaphysical or spiritual issue of, do you have the right to take your own life? And do we really prepare a place for ourselves on the other side in the afterlife that's a function of what we did or didn't do in this life? And the preponderance of the channeled and mediumistic material says exactly that. And I knew that sort of theoretically. I knew that from other survival literature, but I didn't know it so much about the particular repercussions about from suicide itself. And since the whole book was dealing with that, especially, this was new to me. This was like focusing in and specializing in a subset of survival research literature and going deeper and deeper and deeper into it, and then spreading sideways over to this whole terrorist bombing stuff and looking at, you know, is Allah going to reward you with 70 virgins and you're going to be welcome open-armed over there for killing all these people as well as yourself? And that was new to me, too. I hadn't really looked at the socio-political aspects of it and the Islamic aspects of it.
And that's a lot. And we're going to talk about some of these pieces, aspects, in other portions of the program today. But I want to remind you, you're listening to Positively Incorrect. This is your host, Scott Cluthie, and it is Lyme. Healthy living with a twist. We are so glad you're out there. It is Sirius Satellite Channel 114. A fascinating and sometimes disturbing, depending on what's happened in your life or your thoughts, and hopefully hopeful program today that gives you a new way to look at perhaps something you or someone you know has been considering. That's the intention. Suicide, what really happens in the afterlife? Channeled conversations with the dead. We're going to come back and talk with Pamela Rae Heath and John Klimo about what those channels are saying. The folks on the other side, who really are standing right next to us, had to say about all this. It is Positively Incorrect. Your host, Scott Cluthie. Glad to have you listening to Line. I'll be leaving with a twist. We'll be right back. So glad you've stayed here. It is Positively Incorrect. Your host, Scott Cluthie, here on Lyme, Healthy Living with a Twist. Sirius Satellite, Channel 114, and always streaming live from the website, Lyme.com. By the way, I want to hear from you. Yes, we're going to be going live. We're going to be live with you on Mondays starting in July, 7 p.m. East Coast time. So I want to hear from you. What do you want to hear about? I want to talk to the people. We have some incredible programs coming up, so do write to me, Positively Incorrect, at Lyme.com, and I would love to hear programs, ideas, concepts you have, and so on, and respond and create community with you through Lyme Radio, so it's great to have you out there. My two guests are John Klimo, who is Associate Professor of Psychology, American Schools of Professional Psychology, author of what's many considered the definitive study of the phenomena of channeling, investigations on receiving information from paranormal sources, and Pamela Rae Heath, Dr. Heath, who is both an MD and holds a degree in psychology as well, doctoral degree in parapsychology, is the author of The PK Zone, a cross-cultural review of psychokinesis, but their newest book is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. So, Pamela, what's the consensus? Why do people commit suicide?
You know, one of the things that the spirit realm states, which actually kind of surprised me, is that many times people commit suicide because on some level they feel othered. They feel they're not a part of society. Or we have quite a few reasons. Different people come back and talk about, oh, I did this to get even, or this was an accident, or I just didn't feel I had any other choices. There are many, many different reasons people say it. But what the spirit realm says is it kind of boils down to them feeling othered.
Disenfranchised, like Columbine, right?
Precisely. And the big surprise for me in the book was that suicide bombers are a lot more like traditional suicides than you'd think.
Really?
That they actually have a lot of common things that lead up to being vulnerable to be manipulated into becoming a suicide bomber.
Outcasts?
Well, or just feeling they don't have choices.
No voice, no choice?
Correct.
Okay. And is there a differentiation, John, with younger suicides versus older suicides, or let's say assisted suicides? Because, frankly, we could do a whole show just on assisted suicide and the ethical questions around that.
Yeah, well, if there's a common denominator of perceived hopelessness and helplessness on the part of a
yes.
potential suicide, if physical pain or extreme psycho-emotional or physical pain, extreme helplessness as perceived is what one has been confronted with, then it's interesting to note where on the spirit side, whether they deem that excusable or understandable, and they kind of have a little more compassion for it, or whether they just say, look, that was not your call to make. You were not given this life. I mean, you were given this life. You didn't give it to yourself, so you can't take it away, really. It's kind of a transcendental
You can't take away what was given to you in the first place,
yeah,
right?
But when it comes down to relieving, intolerable pain or suffering, and then again, there's psycho-emotional as well as physical suffering,
yes.
Who's to make the judgment call that you should stay around in this lifetime and in this physical body suffering to endure this at all costs? I mean, who's to make that call rather than to relieve this intolerableness and then end up on the other side and have really be your own judge, do your own life review and see, maybe I could have held in there longer, maybe I could have looked for palliative care from the physicians that raise their consciousness about it, get more medication. Maybe
yes.
I didn't have to go out that way, but most of us don't have those resources. And pressed with those extreme conditions, we don't think straight, we don't reason straight, and we don't even know what our resources are. And so we will take that out, and then the first thing you're faced with is kind of the sin of commission, that, gee, did I have to have done that? Look at what I
was it the right about. Time? Could I have waited? Well, you know, my late wife, actually, we struggled with cancer for 12 years. And one of the last things she said to me was that that I can do more for you on the other side than this side. Yeah. And you know, and I think I probably would have helped her leave here if she wanted to. But she didn't. She just, you know, she stayed until she left. And I was there. And I was really cognizant of her leaving. Of course, she didn't go anywhere because she's here right now. But that's my take on it.
Yeah.
And so this idea that that this retribution for our actions, I want to get real clear on this, because reading in the book about some of the souls talking about where they are, I don't know where I am, I can't remember my, you know, it's almost like I can't remember my name. If you could think, and it's funny because I woke up the other day in almost that fog where I didn't even know what time it was, I didn't know what day. If you were to take that and extrapolate it out 1,000 times, maybe you get close to what these souls are trying to communicate. You know, they can't reference anything. It's like they're there, but they can't get there from here. They know like there are other people in the room, but it's like it's dark. They can't see them. They're sort of part of their soul experience or their what they're going through, Pamela. It seems to be they have to process this until they're sort of allowed in the light, but it's them allowing them in the light. Is that right?
Well, that can... It depends, is what I would say. Certainly not for assisted suicide. They seem to have quite a different experience than the traditional suicides or the suicide bombers. You know, I'll state that up front.
Interesting.
Most of them are very close to the end of life anyway, and very few of them had regrets, and they seem to have relatively easier transitions. Although, like other people who have had long illnesses, they may spend a lot of time sleeping in the afterlife as a method of recovering. In terms of the traditional suicides, especially those who are dealing with combinations of mental illness with drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
They do seem to have more problems with confusion. Also, people who were convinced that there was no afterlife have a horrible time adjusting to the afterlife because they're
that's
just
a bit
so
of a shock.
Sure, they're so sure there's nothing after death that they can't quite get it through their heads that they're dead, and they have terrible confusion. So different experiences for different people. It really seems to run the gamut, and a little bit of it, I'd have to say, sounded to me as I was going through the data
yes.
as being culturally influenced.
In what way?
In the sense that if you looked at the material in the 1930s, a lot of Carl Wicklund's material and earlier, they seem to emphasize the confusion of spirit. Whereas some of the later material emphasizes how they're greeted by spirit helpers, who, if they can see the spirit helpers, will often orient them. The problem seems to be one of, are they open to seeing the spirit helpers or not? And the problem may not be limited to suicide. Any kind of sudden death, or where a person just can't quite accept the concept that they're dead, can make it difficult, I think, for them to actually connect to their spirit helpers, and
yes.
that's where rescue circles of the living and psychics who are aware of them being there may actually be helpful.
What about, and this is, I don't know why, but I just want to ask this question, John. What about people who are confirmed atheists in this life, you know, that this is it?
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter? What's that?
As we were just talking, I was thinking of my father, who was a confirmed atheist, a rather loud one, pronounced one, who died a number of years ago, about 20 years ago. And 2 days after he died, by God, he showed up at my bedside when I got back out here to California after the funeral. To my satisfaction, I wasn't trying to prove it to anybody else, but boy, did I have an in-my-face experience. And he didn't know what to expect after he died. He expected nothingness. And when he got somethingness rather than nothingness,
oops.
Part of the somethingness he got really fits the old adage, you know, on both sides of reality, you create your own reality. Because he went in with an expectation that there wasn't anything for quite a while, there wasn't anything, And then, you know, it's sort of like being in a half-lucid dream where you don't know that you're dead.
Right.
And he died in his sleep in intensive care. And so he was bewildered, and he kind of ended up by my bedside because he knew I was into all this stuff, even though he didn't believe it or we didn't talk much about it. And he was just saying, where am I? There's this wonderful perfume I smell in the air. Where am I? And he's a sea captain, and he thought he was in some strange port or something. So I tried to comfort him as
cute.
Best I could. But you know, we do create our own reality, I believe, on all levels of reality. And if you don't think there's going to be anything, then it's going to... then we want to bring you around slowly with kind of milk and cookies on the other side and not be too rude in awakening that, no, you're not done yet. Actually, it goes on forever. You're an immortal spirit.
Now, we only have a short time before the break, Pamela, but I'm also curious, as a doctor, as an MD, mm-hmm. If you can do it in 30 seconds, what do you see? Are there changing perceptions with the people you're working with? Do you see what am I calling it? Value changes? Are people considering that the afterlife is a part of current life? Or is there any shift in the public in believing in the afterlife?
Oh, it still runs the gamut. I don't think there's any... it's going to depend on where you are. I'm here in the Bay Area, and there's much more openness to spirituality in the afterlife.
Okay, well, we'll come back with more and get into some specifics, communications, and people, such as John Edwards, of course, who's brought forward a lot of information, and historically as well, suicide bombers and all that and more. It's suicide, what really happens in the afterlife, channeled conversations with the dead. You're listening to Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Kluthe, on Sirius Satellite Channel 114, Lyme, Healthy Living with a Twist. Happens in the afterlife, especially around the issue of suicide. A profound, thought-provoking, sometimes disturbing, and certainly something thoughtful for those who are in situations where they're thinking of taking their own life. They've had others take their lives around them, the profound impact emotionally, psychologically, financially on others. All these questions, the larger questions of things like mass suicide, people who've committed mass suicide. I mean, I didn't, you know, talking about the Guyana and the terrible things that went down there, all the way to 9/11. I mean, really, history is chock full of both intimate suicide and mass suicide murder, really. And so all these questions are addressed at some level in the new book as information from the other side brought forward to this side, from the spirit world to us. And there is important information for us to consider. Even if you don't believe in the afterlife, thinking about the consequences of those actions and what we're sharing in the show might be something to consider. What you cause, the grief of people around you, that alone I think is very compelling if you have any intimate relationships, and who doesn't really. Suicide, what really happens in the afterlife, channel conversations with the dead. My guests are Dr. Pamela Ray Heath, Dr. John Klimo, and it's a pleasure to have you both with us. And you are listening, by the way, to Sirius Satellite Channel 114. It's Lyme, Healthy Living with a Twist, and Positively Incorrect. Dr. Klimo, you have a lot of research on psychokinesis and all different areas of
That's Pam's specialization, psychokinesis.
You see, I'm already cross-referencing. I am so ADHD, it's ridiculous. At least I'm getting your names right somewhere.
Oh, no, you're doing fine. Yeah, go on.
Thank you for that supportive endeavor. But in regards to the effects on the people here on Earth, what do the channeled spirits say, and do you have in particular some that strike you from channeled receiving, whether it's John Edward or even just an individual in a seance or whatever, that you really want people to get about the effects, the profound, depression, you know, causes to do things without thinking about the consequences. Because we're so compressed, but really it gets so much worse, doesn't it? When we suicide, the effects on those we leave behind.
Well, at the time you're caught up in the throes of the pain and suffering on Earth, you don't think straight necessarily. You don't know what your options are. You're not really informed. We don't really talk about these things much. There's a lot of taboos and ignorance about it. So then if you do the deed and you get up, you end up on the other side, then you have the luxury of floating around on the astral plane or being in the presence of some spirit guides who may be some counsel to you, and But you can then reflect on what happened. You can look back at your life, do kind of a life review, weigh the strengths and weaknesses, the sins of omission, the sins of commission. And if the big sin of commission was that you killed yourself, then you are now in the process of having that in your own hands and living with it. And you are sort of making your own heaven or hell there, but it's not a done deal. You can make reparations, you can do restitution. That's why a number of these whole books that were dictated by people who killed themselves and then communicated back, and a publishing house was created to tell their story, was the attempt of someone who had killed themselves to want to make better on what had happened. They want to
make amends.
Yeah, and so they either reach a loved one or an intermediary, a John Edwards, whoever it may be, and they dictate automatic writing or clairaudiently or through trans-channeling or whatever it might be. They communicate back and tell their story. And very often there are apologies. There are, you know, if I had the perspective I have here now in the afterlife, I wouldn't have done it when I was alive. We hope that you still on Earth don't do the thing that I did, because this is what may lay in store for you. It's not that you're damned to eternal hell fires at all. It's just that you are haunted by that irrevocable deed, and you're an immortal spirit, and you need to continue on, either reincarnate or continue on in the afterlife in light of what happened and what you've learned from it. And there are things to learn from the worst deeds. There are things you can do to counterbalance it, including to make amends, to make communication, to reach out with love or apology or information to those still on Earth that you might have left really in the lurch.
Sort of spiritual community service, if you will.
Yes.
Pamela Ray.
Very common. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you address this from the idea of, is there anything that, for a spirit, is there anything that's more profoundly heavy to deal with? I mean, the thing is, the issues here cause the suicide, but then how is it to deal? Those issues don't go away, right? They're not resolved. I mean, we bring them to our next life. What do you have to say about that?
One of the big things they have to deal with is forgiveness of themselves for what they did, for their own acts, and for the harm they've caused others. And that forgiveness, we know from our own everyday life, when you've hurt somebody you care about, it can be very hard to forgive yourself. And that's something they have to be able to do at some point. And not only do they have to look at how their act affected their own life, but they have to look at how their act affected the lives of everybody whose lives they touched and of everybody whose lives they could have touched. Now, in the case of even ordinary suicide, that can be a lot of lives they have to look at. And in the case of a suicide bomber, that it's even more magnified.
And we're going to talk about the more sort of political, religiously inspired, the context of doing an act, you know, of maybe political, so on, in our last piece. And the fact is, I can't really impact the audience enough on how deep this book is. This is not a light read. How much research, John, did you have to go to pull this all together? Because you have resources that go extensively. I mean, I'm amazed at how much has been written about suicide, even just from the basis of medicine, science, and philosophy.
Well, it's a whole field of endeavor. There's whole libraries of books written and journal articles and research and tremendous attempts, like with cancer, AIDS, to address what to do in the way of suicide prevention, because it keeps right on going. And I don't know if this book will make much difference, but we hope it will.
Well, you know what I have to say about that? It's funny, because I thought of this earlier. I thought, well, I won't bring that. But I did a show, a cable show, and I mean, this was 30 years ago, okay? This is like the beginning of me doing this kind of work at all. And I interviewed this little spiritual guru, and she's a wonderful lady. And we sat in front of the Unity Pyramid Church here, and I put it on a little local cable channel. Do you know, like 25, 28 years later, I'm at the same church, and one of the ushers comes up to me and said, Scott, I want to thank you. I said, what? What? John, what do you want to think? He said, well, I was contemplating suicide and I was an alcoholic, and I saw your interview with the guru on meditation and life, and I decided not to. And here I am today, alcohol-free for 25 years, and I'm happy. So, yeah, the information does and can make a difference. I was just doing an interview. I think that it can be profound to have people understand the ramifications of what they're doing, both for here and when they transfer to this other life. And so I think that's important to put in perspective, that this is important information. It's not just something interesting reading. People are killing themselves, and the fact is they're killing the hearts of the people around them, even those who they may, wouldn't you say, Pam, that even sometimes they think that's the reason they're committing suicide?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, my mother and father don't understand me, or my boyfriend
rejects. They don't care, you know.
And especially in young people, you know, they just react, you know, they don't. Is that the case?
Yeah, and a lot of times, a second after they've succeeded, they regret it. It doesn't, as soon as they leave their
that
body,
moment,
they're like trying to get back in again, and they realize
right.
they can't.
Yes.
And you know, there's a related phenomenon here that you and your listeners may know about called the near-death experience.
Yes.
And within that realm, people who attempt to commit suicide and are unsuccessful, in other words, they may go brain dead, heart stop, but they're resuscitated, they're brought back. But while they were physically declared dead, or for all intents and purposes clinically dead, they were having an out-of-body, you know, near-death experience, which, as you may know, is very much like a dying experience and at least a taste of the other side. And so if somebody who is intent on killing themselves gets partway over and then is pulled back into life, they've got an interesting story to tell. And so we have a whole subset of this literature that is based upon near-death experiences of people who hell-bent on killing themselves, were unsuccessful, and yet got a taste of what the repercussions were, a little communication with the spirit realm, a little seeing back on their life, getting out of the box, so to speak, of that pain and torment, and reflecting, and then coming back into the body and having some, and being different than the population who actually did kill themselves and are stuck over there and have their remorse or whatever they have to deal with, or people who, it's another category, this near-death experience. Which
yeah, one is also sometimes have profound spiritual transformations in that moment. That was the voice of Dr. John Flemo. He's associate professor of psychology at the American Schools of Professional Psychology, also author of Channeling Investigation on Receiving Information from Paranormal Sources. My other guest is the co-author of the new book, Suicide. It's Pamela Rae Heath. Dr. Heath holds a doctoral degree in parapsychology from ASPP and Rose Ridge Graduate School of Integrative Psychology, author of The PK Zone. We'll be back with more on Positively Incorrect. Correct. Your host, Scott Cluthie. Glad to have you listening on Sirius Satellite Channel 114, coast to coast, here online. Healthy living with a twist. We have so much great information. The website's unbelievable. More going up all the time. Podcasts, there's blogs, there's community, the TV listings. And yes, you can listen to Lime Radio anytime through your internet connection. You don't have to have Sirius Satellite Radio. It's great and wonderful. But maybe you don't have it at the office or you don't have it at home. Just log in. Lime.com, simple as that. And I do want to hear from you. Questions or comments about shows you want to hear more of. Write to positivelyincorrect@lime.com, and I would love to talk with you. I have some great guests today, the last segment of the show. There's just so much more than we can touch on. I'm going to have him back again in a few months because we'll be taking even more in-depth looks at this. The new book is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife? Channeled Conversations with the Dead. My guests are Dr. Pamela Rae Heath and Dr. John Klimo. Welcome both of you to the program again, John and Pamela.
Thank you.
And actually, my producer, Andrew, raised a great question here during the break, and that is that many people think of a suicide as the easy way out. Pamela, what about that?
Well, we have a whole chapter devoted to the messages that those who successfully committed suicide would say to people who want to commit suicide and follow in their footsteps. And the most common message is, don't do it, because it's not a solution. We looked at every possible reason they had for committing suicide. And in no case were the traditional suicides fully happy with what had happened. In no case was it really the solution they thought it was. It only made their problems worse.
Hmm. Now we go into some really interesting terrain here. What's the first recorded instance of a murder-suicide, as I was saying earlier? If you pull a dagger out 400 years ago and stick the king, you're committing suicide, pretty much, even though the murder came before the suicide. And in the context of what's going on in the world today, you know, Iran wants to equip 40,000 young people with bombs strapped on their bodies. Welcome to Iran. Dr. Klimo, what about the whole question of murder-suicide in particular?
Well, in all the research I've done, and I, you know, every book that's been written in this area of suicide bombers, terrorism, and the like, I purchase. I just bam the expense and build a library. And there's about, you know, 20 books in this area just in the past couple of years, and kind of gleaned the essence of them. And what I got out of that, by the way, which your listeners may have some trouble hearing from me, is that I developed a certain compassion for these suicide bombers. Because they, the Palestinians, let's say, as well as the Iraqis and the Tamil suicide bombers from off of India and others, the Chechen bombers, that they have sort of, from their perspective, they've been driven to the wall. They've been driven to no recourse. They either just sort of lie down and take what's happening to their country, to their homeland, to their families, the tremendous loss of face and humiliation and disempowerment and manipulation that they've experienced, according to them, that they feel that the only power they have anymore is to give their own lives. And then that plays very nicely into all the handlers of the terrorist suicide bombing industry, who say, more cannon fodder here, and yes, you're right. And by the way, if you interpret the Quran right, in the jihad or the holy war, which you will be engaged in, young men and women, according to jihad, that's an exception to the rule. Normally, the Quran in Islam says no murder, no suicide. They're both no.
Very
but
clearly.
There's a little loophole. The little loophole is out. But if it's jihad, if your God, your religion is being threatened, if your very heart of your value system and all your whole gear for generations is threatened this way, then you can rise to the occasion and do the murder or the suicide if necessary, supposedly from the perspective of these terrorists, of these extremists, of these fundamentalists. Still, all of the people I interviewed, all the books I read from the Muslim experts said there's no exception to this rule. Suicide or murder is never okay. But the extremists are making that, finding that loophole, exaggerating and saying, no, this is an exception,
yes,
this is okay. And they tell all the cannon fodder people that Allah will be awaiting you, a place is being made for you, you will be a
hero.
How
many virgins?
Yes, all of that. And so the punchline, which your listeners are probably ready to ask, is, you know, was Allah there ready to greet them open-armed? Did they get their virgins? Was it all as promised? And, of course, the answer is no.
We would expect that answer in any kind of over-amplified, you know, religious conjuring. You know, it's like somehow, you know, look at life. This is life. This is, you know, you expect life to be that much different? Seriously? Anyway. So, Pamela, what do the spirits say besides what John just said? What else do the spirits say about that? You know, especially in the context of people that use religion, which, you know, becomes mind control, which leads people to be drinking fruit punch in the jungle.
Well, you know, the thing that's sort of interesting is no case of religious zealots are they likely to find what they're expecting in the afterlife. In almost every case, regardless of your religious faith, when you get over to the other side, you're going to find things are not quite what you expected. And the more fundamentalist you are, the harder of a time you may have adjusting. Now, the spirit realm does do what it can to make it easier for you. In the case of some of these suicide bombers, in order to get them to finish their transition, they will show themselves as a holy man or as a virgin just to get them to cross over, because these people aren't going to be willing to see them as anything else. And then they have to start gradually easing them into the truth of the situation. You have to remember that you take your personality with you. So if you are an argumentative individual to begin with,
right,
you're still going to be an argumentative individual in the afterlife.
You're still going to be a hardhead, huh?
And you're going to have a very, very slow time of adjusting. Also remember that in the afterlife, it's kind of a world based on love. If all you've known in life is hatred and fear, you're going to have a very hard time coping with a world that operates based on love.
And does that apply, just as a casual note, apply to materialism? You know, if you built your life around acquiring and marrying up for position, stabbing other people in the back on the way up, that kind of thing?
Yes, you're going to have to adjust. And there may be a little phase of adjusting that makes it difficult for you.
Yeah. Is there in particular some things you'd like to say to, particularly to either parents of young people or young people who might be hearing this program, that we might have some food for thought for them, John?
Well, at the beginning of the book, we pose the question, food for thought. What would the world be like if we really knew we survived physical death? And if there was really something like karma, as it's been traditionally defined, in operation in the universe? And that's a haunting question to me. That's one of the reasons that I do the survival research and I co-wrote this book, is that I really want, it would be a different world. It might be a better world. It's debatable what kind of world it would be if we really woke up the next morning and it was just known that we survived physical death and there are repercussions of our acts and there is something like karma. Would we not be more careful, more kind, more considerate, more golden rule-ish if it was that kind of an overarching truth to things? And I believe that that's true, and therefore I live my life that way. I have no irrefutable proof for other people necessarily, but it's sufficient for me, and so I move in the world and have my being with as much compassion and care and sensitivity as I can, because I believe we are embedded within a multidimensional universe that is not just physical reality. We're more than our bodies. We're more than our local personalities, and that's what all this literature we've been studying says. And it says also, you're not going to finish your life just by killing yourself, because your life goes on. You are basically an immortal, open-ended spirit embedded in a loving, complex universe that's like a teaching machine to evolve souls and spirits. And so, for me, it's very heartening and very positive. And I have tremendous compassion for people who are so pushed to the edge by their physical or psycho-emotional pain and suffering that they feel they have to just stop it.
Yeah, it's just horrible to think that. And believe it or not, we are already at the end of this very fast-moving hour. But very quickly, Pamela, what thought would you add to that?
We are responsible for our own lives. And one thing that a number of teenagers who committed suicide would say to other teenagers is, think about your mom. Think about your little brother. Think about the effect on them.
You know, that's powerful.
We're responsible for ourselves. Don't blame them for your problems. We're each of us responsible for our own lives.
I can't recommend the book highly enough if you're at all interested in, A, the topic of suicide, B, the topic of the afterlife, and, of course, all the other consequences. Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, Channeled Conversations with the Dead. It is published by North Atlantic Books. You can find that, of course, in all your favorite bookstores. It's been my great pleasure to spend this hour with Dr. Pamela Ray Health, Heath, and also Dr. John Klimo. John and Pamela, thank you so much for being on Positively Incorrect.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You are listening to Sirius Satellite Channel 114, Lyme, Healthy Living, with a Twist and Positively Incorrect. Write to me at positivelyincorrect@lyme.com. This is Scott Kluthe. Stay tuned for more great radio right here on Lyme, Healthy Living, with a Twist.